Welcome into the Fan Club.
Step one, we buy into this club. Step two, we roll over to the club, either in your Mercedes-Benz or my pre-owned Acura Legend.
It's not as much as a club as it is a couple middle-aged dudes in sweatshirts talking about sports.
Bounce, 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 bounce. Now all the ladies saying bounce, 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 bounce.
But you get the gist. Here's Cody Tapp and Alex Gold.
It is a Fan Club Friday here on 96.5 The Fan. Alex Gold, Drew Nixon, Logan Weber is in for Cody today. Fan Club Friday brought to you by Jay Rieger & Co. And, of course, our friends over at Circa Sports as well. We'll be at Circa Resort and Casino next Wednesday, hanging out in, actually, I guess after the show Wednesday. We'll be there Wednesday night. Shows will be Thursday and Friday, I should say, for their big contest weekend, though. Excited to talk college football a lot this hour. We'll mix in some Chiefs, though, as well, and anything else. We'll also maybe ask Kurtz the same question as we had for the random question of the day. But John Kurtz from the Open for Business newsletter and the Open for Business college football podcast. You've been building this thing up the last couple of years, man. I feel like it's getting more and more traction every year.
It is, man. I appreciate you guys having me. Thank you. Yeah, we got the 3-Mile podcast as well for K-State, Open for Business for Big 12 and beyond with college football. So I'm grinding. You know, that's how you do it these days. No longer just the radio stations. You can do it online.
Absolutely. So, okay, let's start with just the news of the day. And it continues to get messier and messier, which is the college eligibility saga. And there were new court rulings today. Where are we at with this now? We got NFL players trying to go back to college. You got some players that are already in college that might not be eligible anymore. Where are we at with everything on this?
Dude, it's a mess. As with anything in college athletics these days, it is a total mess. A part of it is, I mean, I saw last night too, BYU added a kid to its roster that had played a couple G League games, or not G League, Summer League games in the NBA too. So basically what you had today was two simultaneous rulings, which is one, the NCAA got, I believe they call it a stay, which doesn't mean that they won the case, but for right now, the injunction that was letting everybody come back if they still would have had a year of eligibility under the new 5-for-5 ruling, that was going to allow a bunch of players to come back who had already gone pro and thought their career was done. Well, this stay at the federal level says, no, okay, pause, put a pause on that. We need to figure this out. You can't do that. But the problem is there was another state ruling on the local level where they were like, no, actually, you guys should be able to play. So if you were involved in that state ruling, you can go play right now. If you're anybody else, you can't because you lost the federal protection. So what it amounts to right now, what you need to know right now is if you are a an athlete from the 2022 class and you just finished your eligibility, like you played 4 years, finished your eligibility last year, if you go find the right state judge, you could come back and play college football or college basketball this year. And it's happening. We're seeing guys like on NFL rosters that are like, hey, it would make more sense if I get cut because I can go back and make NIL, which would probably be better for me. I mean, that's introduced a whole new dynamic to college sports these days.
Yeah, I mean, how crazy. I saw that on the NFL side that there are agents and players that know they're probably getting cut by an NFL team here in 2 weeks or whatever it is, because we don't do the multiple cutdowns, it's just the one, that they would rather be cut today so they can go back to college, get the NIL, and also maybe play college football. That, what a mess. Who would have thought we'd be, if I would have told you this 5 or 10 years ago, that there would be guys at NFL training camp with a legitimate chance to make a roster that said, you know what, cut me, I want to go back to college. What?
Yeah, well, so the reason that we're in this position, because I understand, like you might say, well, why is the NCAA like making such a big deal out of this? They're going forward, what they want is 5-for-5. You have 5 years of eligibility to play 5 years. No more red shirts or anything like that. And that's what it's going to be moving forward. And so I can understand why you would say, well, why would they just avoid all this mess and just say, hey, if you were a 2022 kid and you played 4 years, we'll go ahead and give you that retroactive year of eligibility just to avoid all these lawsuits. Well, the problem is, I think even a lot of coaches were on board because they're like, hey, we've got guys on our roster who have been grinding with us all summer and working out with us. And if you flip this on them at the last minute and let players come back, then guys that thought they were going to have playing time that just did everything we asked of them throughout summer workouts and blood, sweat, tears, all that, they're going to lose their spot, or we might have to get rid of some of them, or they won't be able to play. So, I mean, that's why this is all just such a mess. But it's, you know, it's years and decades of the NCAA never wanting to bend an inch toward the student athlete forever, and they just lost a barrage of lawsuits, and that's in essence what led us here. Yeah,
Yeah, and I feel like, I mean, we're talking about what how it's affecting players that are currently on college rosters, but I don't feel like it's being discussed enough how these decisions, these lawsuits that are coming out are damaging high school kids that are trying to make their way into college sports. I mean, they've already had to deal with so many hurdles from the COVID year and guys coming back with extra eligibility from there and all these different things. How much of an effect is this going to have if somehow this stay gets reversed again, or these state-by-state rulings, how it's going to affect high school athletes that are trying to make those moves? Are we going to continue to see more and more guys follow the JUCO route or go play internationally, what have you, to avoid this headache that is college athletics at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think this through now. So it's like if you're going to have a fifth year, so you have a whole class of players that now suddenly will have an extra year to be able to play college football or basketball or whatever this upcoming year. So that can prevent some roster space that would have naturally been there for high school kids. So you probably will run into a high school class here for a year they will have more limited opportunities. And so you bring up some interesting routes there. Yeah, if you're basketball, do you go play internationally? If you are, if you're going the JUCO route, we could see a resurgence in JUCO recruiting, which everybody is seemingly just abandoned these days. I mean, Alex, we grew up following JUCO football recruiting, right? Like that used to be a thing, but it doesn't really exist anymore. So maybe that pumps some juice back into it. But yeah, for sure, I feel bad for some high school kids that are just getting caught in lots of weird jurisdictional rulings that are coming from the NCAA here these days.
We got John Kurtz hanging out with us, talking some college football, talking the collegiate eligibility side of things. Let's get into the locals, though. I'll start with K-State. Obviously, you went to K-State. You've covered them, I don't know, going back, feels like 15 years at this point.
Yeah, it's been a while,
probably,
literally, 2011.
Right? Yeah, you and I are about the same age, I think, too. So, and obviously I went to KU. We'll get to the Jayhawks. We'll also get to the Missouri Tigers in a bit. Kansas State, first off, the unfortunate news, though, here recently, right? So they're starting left tackle, done for the year, and going back to the eligibility stuff, he's done, isn't he?
Yeah, yes, and has had a career that's been kind of marred by injuries, which I feel really bad for him. John Pastore, first team All-Big 12 preseason selection. It's a huge injury, and K-State's run into some really tough luck on the offensive line. The interesting piece of this is the conversation for the last 48 hours has been, is K-State going to kick the tires on someone that might now suddenly have some eligibility?
Probably should.
Because John Pastore was going to be a starting left tackle. He's gone. George Fitzpatrick was, they thought, a plug-and-play starting offensive tackle last year from Ohio State that they brought in as a transfer. He had a really scary, like, heat-related incident in camp last year and was never able to play and still hasn't recovered enough. So they just announced that earlier this week, too, that he's not going to be back. And then Tanner Morley, who was their best get out of the transfer portal on the offensive line, who was going to play on the interior of the line, he's got an injury, too. And I think there's at least some level of optimism that he may come back this year, but a slew of bad offensive line injuries. You're looking at now, they may start Oliver Miller, a true freshman, at left tackle, who Ohio State, Auburn wanted, so he's a highly touted kid, but that's a true freshman at offensive tackle. That's a pretty scary proposition, and you've got an offensive line right now that three of the five projected starters, maybe a fourth, no career starts. I mean, they've got a couple guys that have starts that may be interspersed as backups here, but they're going to have to get really creative. They will be very young. And it's putting a lot of stress for sure on Colin Klein in year one.
I was going to say, Colin Klein, that's, of course, the headline. Brand new head coach there at Kansas State. I think we had you on maybe when he got hired at the time. And obviously the fans are fully behind Colin Klein. What is the expectation in Manhattan, though, for a first-year Colin Klein football team, understanding where the Big 12 is at? And I still think even, we'll talk about the other locals. Out of all the locals, to me, they're the only one that has a real chance to get to a CFP. And I'm not saying I think they're going to get there, but they have the best shot of the locals.
I think that's probably right. I mean, Mizzou's schedule. Boy, I was just looking at Mizzou's schedule today. That is a rough, rough schedule. I would say the fan base before this week and finding out about the offensive line, the fan base was like, dude, if we don't win 10 games against this schedule, what are we even doing here? And now you have this happen and people go completely the other way. Oh, the season's done, right? They have a very manageable schedule. It's like K-State and Texas Tech, if you go look at the metrics, they have the two easiest schedules in the Big 12. The non-con, K-State does not have a P4 opponent, which is partially because they had Washington State scheduled a while out. Washington State, Tulane, those are the ones you need to think about in the non-con. So it's very, very manageable there. They don't play BYU. They don't play Texas Tech. If you could get Avery Johnson to unlock the potential that he has, which is clear that he has it, but he just has not shown that to me yet. I'm not ready to believe it until I see it at this point, because we've seen him play a lot of football and it just hasn't been there. But that to me is the key to the whole season. If you can unlock him, they've got a shot to do about whatever you could want to do in the Big 12. Now, if you're running up against Texas Tech's roster in the Big 12 championship game, that's going to be a tough putt. Especially, we just talked about the offensive line issues. Tech may not have the defensive line of last year with like David Bailey, but it's still going to be really good. They still got a bunch of really good pieces out of the transfer portal there. There are enough question marks on the defensive side of the ball for K-State, too. They've got a Jordan Peterson, who was at Kansas for a while, is the defensive coordinator, first-time P4 DC. Just a lot of youth, I think, in key spots on the coaching staff, though they do sprinkle in a lot of experience, too, with a huge staff. There are enough question marks that I'm like, my expectation's been more like 8-9 wins.
Okay.
And we'll see. With the offensive line, I probably, you know, drift more back toward the 8. And everybody who listens to the Fremont podcast is already mad at me because I picked them 8-4 this year. All right. So I'm taking heat from the fans for being
Drew,
the
8-4
guy.
So Drew's been doing each local school schedule by schedule predictions up on our social media channels. What was your record
some
for
of this? Well, this is before the Pastore news. Okay. But I said 10-2, 7-2 in Big 12 play. Just because
of
the schedule.
So now, knowing the injury, what would you adjust it to?
Probably 9. I think okay. I would lean 9.
It is hard. I will say it's hard when you start going down the schedule game by game. You're like, all right, where are the losses coming from? Because that's what I had to do. I'm like, well, they do. I think a tricky game is they open at Cincinnati in Big 12 play. And Cincinnati can be a tough place to play. And they've actually been really good to start the year 2 years in a row and then just dropped like a rock after that. So I think that will be a tougher game. I did pick them to lose there. It was basically all the road games. They're at Arizona State. I think if Arizona State finds any kind of quarterback play, they've got a talented roster. The problem was I was looking at them, I'm like, well, they do play at Colorado. And I mean, I know Colorado, speaking of teams that have fallen off the face of the earth.
My goodness.
But this,
how quickly did that end, by the way? I mean, there was a time where ESPN couldn't put Colorado on TV enough. And now it's like nobody really wants anything to do with them.
Oh, did you see? There was a big article the other day. I can't remember if it was Front Office Sports, about how the TV ratings have dropped for them. Nobody is watching them anymore.
Yeah.
Nobody's watching them anymore. But I do think them being in the quiet, I think their portal class is a little more substantive this year than it has been. They've been a little more flash over substance in the past. That could be a tough game. They've had good environments with Dion there. Like, the fans do show up and it gets pretty rowdy. So, you know, but I am, if you're like, they're going to lose to Colorado, obviously none of the fans are happy about you saying that right now. You've got to squint a bit to see where the losses come. But I think football-wise, I'm very bullish on where Colin is going long-term. I think he is a stud. I think he's going to be great. This year, my expectations are going to be tempered a little bit from, I think, what the average fan had it, at least before the injuries.
And we talk about the schedule. You mentioned all the road games, not even mentioning that you got Houston at home following that Cincinnati game. That's a team. They're preseason ranked top 25. You mentioned unlocking the potential of Avery Johnson. What does that look like in your view? I know we've seen flashes of how good he could be. He was a great high school quarterback prospect, but the greatness has been few and far between. What would it look like for you to see him unlock that potential, and what can Colin Klein do to help him get there?
It's been very rare to have starting quarterbacks at this level back-to-back years complete less than 60% of their passes. This has been something that's been really hammered on, and he has. He has completed less than 60% of his passes each of the last 2 years as the starting quarterback. So there's room for improvement there, but that's not really what I'm banking on. I've seen enough of him now. I don't know that the pocket passer thing is really going to work out. They need to get him on the run, making plays. I think he is so much better throwing the football on the run. Some of the best plays in his career through the air have happened that way. Go back to the Tulane game. When they were at Tulane, he makes this insane throw on the run to the back of the end zone. They need to let him do that, and they need to get him running more. I talked to him. We did an interview with him on the 3-Mile podcast at Big 12 Media Days, and he just flat out said, we were like, hey, man, it just seems like you run more hesitantly than you did in 2023 when you were a backup and you came in and were just splitting time with Will Howard. And he was like, yeah, it was how it was coached. Now, in fairness, he basically didn't miss any time with injury each of the last 2 years. So they kept him healthy. But to me, that was at the expense of letting him be the player that he needs to be. The other side of that coin is like Arizona State said, hey, Sam Leavitt, we'll let you cut it loose and go be that type of player. And he spent most of last year injured. I just think at this point in his career, you've got to let it fly. He's got to be instinctual runner, go make plays, and it's going to have to be with his legs and becoming a total playmaker if K-State is going to achieve anything like a 10-win season. If you want to win 8 games again, then sure, fine, try to protect him. The good news for K-State fans is I don't think that's Colin's MO at all. You remember Colin Klein, right? He ran the ball a lot. He told us a story the other day about how Dana Dimmel, his offensive coordinator, told him 1 week, hey, we know you haven't been able to walk. He was literally like, I couldn't walk after a game all week. I couldn't practice. And they were like, we'll take it easy on you. That was a 2011 Texas A&M game. It went into multiple overtimes, and he had 35 carries. So that's Colin Klein. That's the guy who's coaching Avery Johnson. I think he's going to be like, dude, you're going to have to run the ball and go make plays. And that, to me, to answer the original question, is how I think the improvement will have to come from him.
John, if you were to tell me, so one of the I looked at Marcel Reed's stats compared to his, and obviously Marcel Reed, a guy that Colin Klein coached last year and has coached for the last 2 years. If you were to tell me Marcel Reed's numbers were a little bit better, I went and I looked, but I think Avery's a little bit better runner than Marcel Reed is. If you were to say he had Marcel Reed's numbers from last year, which was like 3,100 yards passing, 25 touchdowns, which he had his first year as a starter, Avery did, but the completion percentage, as you mentioned, was like 62. If you were to just give you that, if I were to give you that stat line, do you feel like that's enough where the experience that Colin has coaching at Marcel Reed transitions to Avery where, hey, I was with a guy that you're maybe a better runner then, but if we can get you to play similarly to Marcel, then you can elevate this team to get to that 9-3, that 10-2 that fans are expecting or wanting.
Yeah. See, my I want to fire back with a question and be like, okay, what's the rushing number that I'm getting with that?
Marcel had 400 some rushing yards last year, I think, and Avery was about in the same camp
in terms of just
2025 numbers.
You're right. And I think in 24, Avery was more like in the 600 range.
Yes.
I want like pushing like 700 plus rushing yards. If I can get that with the numbers from Marcel Reed, then passing the football, then yeah, I think you could be talking about a really nice season. And I mean, frankly, that's a lot of the reason for optimism. If you want to paint the optimistic case for K-State, is like, nothing against Marcel Reed. I think he's fine, but I think he's fine. I don't think Marcel Reed's like a great player. And late in the season last year, there was some fringe Heisman talk for him when Texas A&M was still undefeated, albeit against as soft as you can get an SEC schedule, right? It finally toughened up on him at the end of the year. And then they couldn't move the ball at all against Miami with the terrorizing pass rush that they had in the playoff. But I think Colin squeezed a lot of juice out of Marcel Reed last year, and that should give you a lot of hope of what he could do with Avery.
It is a Fan Club Friday. We're hanging out with John Kurtz here in studio talking college football. He's going to actually join us on a weekly basis once we get going here and start the season. Looking forward to that. But we wanted to have him in for a Fan Club Friday presented by Jay Rieger and Co. and Circus Sports. All right, we'll get to the SEC, but while we're on the Big 12, let's go to the next local, obviously the Kansas Jayhawks. Yesterday, there were the comments that made the rounds from Lance Leipold talking about this quarterback competition. You know, he kind of even went as far to say, you know, we could have two quarterbacks all year, which as a KU alum, I roll my eyes at that. That just drives me crazy. What do you make of the quarterback situation there? Cole Ballard, Isaiah Marshall. And it does feel like it could be a bit before they narrow this thing down. Do you buy in that?
It's going to be Cole Ballard, right? I mean, it's
probably, if I had a guess, but are you think this is all talk, or do you think they could go into not the opener, but the Missouri game? Do you think they actually, well, maybe they will publicly the week of, but do you think we'll leave the Missouri game not knowing who the starter is?
Here would be the way I would frame that. Now, this is with, I don't have a ton of inside knowledge on the Kansas program, right? But Andy Kotelnicki, I am a stan of that guy. I think he's an incredible offensive coordinator. I was as a K-State guy, I was deathly afraid of him when he was at Kansas before he left. I think he could be looking at two quarterbacks and like, all right, well, Isaiah Marshall's a pretty fun toy to play with here. Maybe I can make this
great
work.
Great runner, yep.
Yeah, with a couple different guys. He brings a different element. Not that Cole Ballard can't run, because like, here's my thing with Cole Ballard. I know people have been fairly down on Kansas, and a part of it is because they feel like Dylan Edwards, you can see the potential, but outside of that, are there enough playmakers there? And quarterback is part of that. Dude, I mean, Alex, you remember the 2023 K-State Kansas game? I still have nightmares of what Andy Kotelnicki did with a freshman.
Hell of a game.
Freshman walk-on, right? Cole Ballard at that point, who was playing because Jason Bean and Jalen Daniels were hurt. I mean, he had K-State dead to rights. That was a good K-State team that won 9 games, should have won at Texas. And if Rich Miller, who I still send a Christmas card to every year, wouldn't have dropped a pick six, Kansas was going to win that game by 14 mm-hmm. points, mm-hmm. and K-State won it. And so Kotelnicki doing that with Cole Ballard at that time has always stuck in my mind. Like, I feel like that guy can scheme up a lot with him. I think every time you watch those 22 and 23 Kansas teams, there's a tight end running with nobody within 10 yards of him. That guy will scheme some things up for whoever's going to play quarterback. But I really wonder if it's going to be, hey, Cole Ballard's the guy, but we're going to work in Isaiah Marshall because Kotelnicki can get really, really creative with that.
We're talking about the KU offense, and I'm with you. Their offensive coordinator is fantastic. Their offense has been great. The problem has been the defensive side of the football. They were among the worst defenses in all of FBS college football a season ago. Is there anything they did on that side of the football, whether it was bringing in transfers, some new guys along the defensive coaching staff, that leads you to believe that that unit could be any better than it has been the last couple of seasons?
See, that's where I'm not as optimistic. I mean, that would be where my pessimism lies for Kansas this year, and I think it will tell probably what the ceiling of the team is going to be. Because even with Jalen Daniels, there were injury issues in 2022, but you think about that team was really dynamic offensively. That receiver core that they had for a couple of years was great. They had Devin Neal at running back. And even with all the offensive fireworks that they had there, they were still that team. What, they lost the Liberty Bowl, right? So they finished 6-7. Anyway, we've seen Lance Leipold with dynamic offenses before. They've got to get a defense, and I think that's been the thing that's really dogged his entire time in Lawrence. And for them to reach the next level where Kansas fans really want the program to get, especially after a lull over the last couple of years, it's going to take the defense, and I have not seen anything yet. You know, I mean, they had some key hits to the transfer portal too that lost and even transferred within conference. So I think Kansas needs to prove it to me on defense before I'm buying that.
I'm skeptical on the quarterback situation, I'll be honest. And then I look at the schedule and I start going through it. I'm like, this feels like, unfortunately, a 5-win football team, unless they shock some people and they upset Missouri and Lawrence, and obviously they're underdogs in that game. What do you make of their schedule? They open up next Friday, or two Fridays from now, I guess it is, against Long Island. Then they get the huge test against Missouri and Lawrence.
Yeah, can you rattle off their Big 12 schedule for me real quick?
Yeah. So they open up Big 12 schedule, Arizona State, then they have a non-con in between that. Then they go to top 25 Utah, looks like, at K-State on the 17th of October, home to Baylor, at TCU, home to UCF, at West Virginia, home to BYU, at Oklahoma State.
Yeah, so you're missing Tech, but you got BYU, you got Utah. I think it's a reasonably tough Big 12 schedule. And the Missouri game, I mean, I'm just so glad that game's getting played. Like, I have such an affinity for the Kansas-Missouri rivalry, and I remember very fondly, well, in some ways, when that rivalry got really hot in 2007, 2008, like that era, and you had those games at Arrowhead. So I'm really glad that game's getting played, and I think, depending on the Ahmad Hardy situation at Mizzou, like that could be within your grasp because they're coming to play you.
I guess I should mention the Arizona State game. That's, of course, the one they're playing in London, the Union Jack Classic or whatever it's called. Yeah,
which they're trying to they have a bye week and then a non-con after that. Right. So they're trying to pad that as much as they can, which I think is really smart after watching what happened to K-State season last year. They went to Ireland.
A bad track record of teams that play in Ireland or overseas. And this year, what's TCU, North Carolina?
And TCU just lost the starting safety for aggravated assault this week. So
Logan was just telling me he beat up his own play. He beat up his own teammate.
His own teammate in the hospital. Apparently, there was beef, and he didn't like the way he was being treated. And he wound up beating the hell out of him.
Yeah. Jeez. So TCU, I would say, would be your candidate for the Ireland season or the Ireland downturn this year. But yeah, I think Kansas is a 6-6 ish team. The wild card to me would be, can Andy Kotelnicki really spark something and the offense just goes off? To me, it feels like they need a more dynamic quarterback situation if they're going to be like an 8-plus win team. I don't know that Cole Ballard is that guy. I think he can win you some games, but the higher upside play would be Isaiah Marshall if he can win the job at some point this year. So I think after seeing that schedule, seeing the strength that's there on it relative to the rest of the Big 12, I'm with you generally, maybe a tick higher on Kansas than you are. And to me, that's just the Kotelnicki factor. I think he's that good.
Going through the locals on the college football front, coming up next here, Fan Club Friday, of course, let's go to the SEC. Talking about the Missouri Tigers, not just their new uniforms that everybody's talking about from yesterday, but what are the chances of the Missouri Tigers surprising some people in the very, very tough SEC? We'll do that next here on 96.5 The Fan. Back here on a Fan Club Friday, Alex Gold, Logan Weber, Drew Nixon with you. We've got John Kurtz as our guest in the Fan Club today, presented by Jay Rieger and Circus Sports. If you haven't checked it already, John Kurtz does a great job covering college football. Also, you said you got a specific K-State show that you do as well, right?
Yes, called Three Ma, you know, like E-Ma, but there's three of us.
I see.
Pretty clever.
You got that. And then check out the Open for Business podcast, Open for Business newsletter. Great insight from John. We were talking about all the locals. We got to KU and K-State in the first segment. Let's talk about the Missouri Tigers. Go over to the SEC. We all know that this schedule for starters is just, we were just talking about during the break, is absolutely brutal. Let's start there. And then we can get to, you mentioned Ahmad Hardy's name already. We can get to what that might mean for Missouri if and when they get him back. But they open up, okay, Arkansas Pine Bluff. Then they go to Kansas. We were just talking about that game. Troy. And then it's SEC play. And at Mississippi State, home to Florida, at I guess it'd be home to A&M, at Ole Miss before their bye week, and then post bye week you get at Arkansas, home to number 5 Texas, at number 3 Georgia, Kentucky at home, home to Oklahoma. It is a gauntlet of an SEC schedule. The last 2 years, we've always talked about Missouri saying, hey, the schedule's not too bad for you. It sets, 2 years ago, it was perfectly set up for them. This is one of those years where the schedule, even if Missouri is a better football team, and I don't know if they will be, that schedule is brutal.
It is, and even, you look at, okay, what are the breaks here? At Arkansas, now, I will say, I think Arkansas is the worst team in the SEC. That is a road game, but I think Arkansas, you'll probably be able to win, but like, Mississippi State, man, Mississippi State's got a pretty good quarterback. I think they could be tricky. And Kentucky is one of these teams that is actually drawing a lot of preseason love. Will Stein's doing a great job there. He's recruited a ton of talent since coming over from Oregon. I think Kentucky could be plucky, especially at the end of the year when they've had a chance to really figure it out. So even the perceived breathers here are not that easy. I don't know what to think about Florida with John Sumrall in year one, but dude, we just said during the break, like Eli Drinkwitz has kind of mastered this. Take care of who you should take care of. Beat up on a bunch of teams that would finish below you in the standings, but fail to get over the hump and win that really big game. You think about, for instance, like the Bama game last year, which got fairly close, but couldn't close on that type of thing. Well, this is the schedule where, like, if that's what you're going to be, I mean, how many wins are on here? Because if it's that type of Missouri team again, like, you're going to have a hard time beating Texas A&M. You're going to have a hard time beating Ole Miss. You're going to have a hard time beating Texas. You're going to have a hard time beating Georgia. You're going to have a hard time beating Oklahoma. So are we talking about a 7-5 ceiling right away there? I mean, as optimistic as you could be as a Mizzou fan, I don't know what, I guess, are you thinking 9-3? Like 9-3 is
the
ceiling
with this
thing?
That'd be a hell of a year. With this schedule, if they got to 9 wins, that would be an unbelievable job, actually, from Eli Drinkwitz to get to 9 with this schedule. It's more, the schedule's just, and I know there's surprises all of a sudden, some teams starting quarterbacks out and you feel differently, but as it stands right now, and I guess we could look to in Vegas, John, to see where
total.
I'll look those up.
6.5 or 7.5.
Yeah, let me look into that for a second. What about the quarterback situation? We were talking off air. Of course, you get a transfer in Austin Simmons.
Yeah, well, and the interesting, to close the book on the schedule, the interesting thing is there, if you can go 9-3 against that schedule, I do think a 9-3 SEC team is going to get into the playoff here pretty soon. Whether it's going to be this year or not, you might have a shot, and I know Steve Sarkisian should be arguing for you with as much as he's campaigning.
So the answer, by the way, at least over at FanDuel, over-under is 6.5. Drew was right on the Missouri win total. -115 to the over, -105 to the under for the win total there. Just we can look at the win totals for KU and K-State.
So it's like 7-5. Like they're basically saying, like, we think this is a 7-5 type of team here, which that sounds about right to me looking at that schedule. Austin Simmons at quarterback be really interesting because you can take a couple of different routes here, right? Like he was at Ole Miss last year. He was going to be the starter. Well, was the starter and then gets hurt. He got Wally pipped by Trinidad Chambliss, who now, you know, a lot of people think he's the best quarterback in college football. So is your spin on that? Well, hey, Austin Simmons was good enough to beat out Trinidad Chambliss to start the year last year. Now, Trinidad Chambliss was just sort of like an afterthought in the portal. He was brought in basically to be a backup. So some of that could be what was your perception about him before the year. But you could say, hey, he was good enough to beat out Chambliss at one point in time. Or, hey, Lane Kiffin did move jobs and he needed a quarterback. He didn't go get Austin Simmons here. He went and got Sam Leavitt, who spent half the year injured last year too. So I don't, truth be told, I did not watch Ole Miss's non-con closely enough at the beginning of last year to give you like a full eval on Austin Simmons. He's definitely a name. There's a track record there. Lane Kiffin thought he was good enough to bring in and once again was at one point ahead of Chambliss. I think he's certainly got potential. We'll see what Drinkwitz can do with him. The other thing is just like, how much are you going to get from Ahmad Hardy this year? I mean, he may be the best running back in college football, like 1,600 rushing yards last year. But if you're going into the SEC schedule and he still hasn't fully recovered, which obviously it's just an awful story.
Yeah.
Getting shot in the offseason and still hasn't practiced and trying to recover from that. But, you know, you would have said, what, Damon Wilson, the pass rusher last year, the edge, and Ahmad Hardy would have been the two best players on Mizzou's roster if you don't have either of them because Damon Wilson's now in Miami. Going into that SEC schedule, it is hard for me to find where you're going to be winning 8 or 9 games.
Going back to the schedule thing, Eli Drinkwitz, this is according to Pick 6 previews, he's 0-16 against winning record SEC teams. So going back to that conversation around him, if you have an SEC team that's got a winning record where you look at Georgia, Texas, Oklahoma, you know, those type of Ole Miss, Texas A&M, he's never beaten a team that's had a winning record in the SEC.
And I think it's interesting with this Mizzou team, because last year, obviously, the quarterback play was not up to snuff at all. But you had a great running game and a great defense. You know, even if Ahmad Hardy is ready to go and he plays in the KU game and in for the rest of the year, which I don't think is incredibly likely. For me, the biggest question for this Mizzou team is that defense. You lost 8 of your 9 top guys in pass coverage. Eight of the nine guys with the most coverage snaps are no longer on this roster, and 6 of your 8 most productive pass rushers are no longer on this roster. That amount of turnover gives me a great deal of pause with this Mizzou team, because that's been kind of their calling card, is a solid running game and great defense. How do you think the turnover on that side of the football could affect the bottom line for this Tigers team?
Yeah, I think it's really concerning. Like, because you're going to, again, going through the schedule, I hate to keep harping on that, but you look at some of the quarterbacks that you're going to face here. I mean, Marcel Reed, we already talked about him and what he did last year. Trinidad Chambliss, and that's going to be on the road. Arch Manning and Texas. I mean, John Mateer at Oklahoma, if he stays healthy, that was his problem last year. He was really good when he was actually healthy. Like, those are some dudes that you're going to be playing at quarterback. I'm not even mentioning the Georgia game there, which is perhaps unfair to Gunnar Stockton, but, you know, I mean, whatever you think of his ceiling, that's certainly going to be an effective offense too. So, yeah, I agree with you. And it's, especially if you're going to, the first part of that season, if you're going to have to be nursing Ahmad Hardy back, I guess if you can get him going by, like, the schedule really ramps up in mid-October. So if you can get him back by the time October's there around, maybe that'll take some of the stress off the defense. But I think early on, you're definitely going to need that defense to be ready to go in SEC play.
We're talking to John Kurtz here, going through locals on the college football front. You mentioned John Mateer. He's a name that some people have thrown out as maybe a dark horse. I don't know if he's a dark horse, but a Heisman candidate. He obviously got off to a good start last year. Let's talk bigger picture college football for a little bit. What do you make of the Heisman race maybe this year in college football? I can pull up the odds on that as well if you don't have them in front of you. We take a look at least over at Circa Sports and some of the other books that are out there. The favorite is CJ Carr at 7-1. Arch Manning, you already brought up, 8.5-1. Mensa, 9.5-1. Julian Sayin over at Ohio State, right, 12-1. Dante Moore goes back to Oregon. He's 12-1. And then Jeremiah Smith, who people hope the Chiefs somehow by a miracle find a way to draft next year. I don't know how that's going to happen, barring a disastrous season. But he's 15-1.
Well, you don't, Cyrus Allen, you don't need him.
Cyrus Allen. You're good. You don't need him anymore. Yeah, already you know? Saw enough. You, there's probably plenty of people that agree with you that Cyrus Allen, just as good as Jeremiah Smith, will be in the NFL.
Yeah, you know, let's just fuel the hype machine here. It's
might
August.
As well.
That's what this time is. I'll tell you, the two guys that I really like there, like Dante Moore, it's, to me, I thought Dante Moore would be the first name out of your mouth. I was like, he's great.
Yes.
Oregon, a lot of people, I tend to think Oregon's the most talented team in the country. This feels like it's the year where Dan Lanning maybe should win the national championship is too strong, but they would be my favorite right now to win the national championship. And a big part of it is Moore. Like, that guy is a total stud, and they have a lot around him. I don't really think there's much of a glaring weakness on that Oregon team. The other one to watch out for, though, is Darian Mensah. You know, he's been on the come up. Obviously, he was great at Duke, and it was really controversial how he got to Miami. But he's there, and he's got Malachi Toney, and he brought his best receiver from Duke along with him. Barkate is coming with him to Miami, and that guy was great last year for Duke. Now he's going to be like a number two with Malachi Toney soaking up all the attention. I think they're going to have a really, really good offense. Like, Mensah, I've been a fan of Mensah ever since he really tore up K-State a couple of years ago when he was still at Tulane, you know, before people really knew about him. So I would watch out for him if you're thinking like Heisman candidates. I know he's not exactly a great value based on where the odds are at. The only thing with him is if Malachi Toney is having another season like he had last year, 100 catches and 1,000 yards as a true freshman, you could theoretically split some Heisman votes there. But I think Mensah will be really, really good.
Is there an under-the-radar guy that is not being thrown around a lot in these Heisman conversations? Because that's become the trend in college football. These guys that, see, I mean, Jaden Daniels, when he won the Heisman, was like a preseason plus 5,000 to go out and win it. Devonta Smith in 2020. These guys that are never, ever thrown into these conversations ultimately end up winning it. And the guy that's the preseason favorite, an Arch Manning or a Spencer Rattler, ends up falling off the earth these odds. Yeah. Spencer Rattler, like 2021, 2022, is like the preseason Heisman favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny, man. Look, I will play to my Big 12 roots here. And I'm going to give you a guy from the Big 12 because I think he's criminally underrated, just not talked about enough, especially in the context of everything we began talking this hour about, all the craziness in college football and guys transferring and leaving and coming back. Noah Fifita has spent his entire career at Arizona. He's the returning first-team All-Big 12 quarterback. And Arizona's getting, you know, they're like on the fringe of the top 25 discussion. They won 9 games last year. They bring back the entire coaching staff. Danny Gonzalez, their defensive coordinator, was a semifinalist for the Broyles Award. Their defense made huge strides, and they lost 4 NFL defensive backs, which is a lot to replace. But if that team can win 10-plus games, like, I think they're going to have to rely on Noah Fifita. I think they'll be back to having to outscore people a little bit more as they get that defense coming along. They are going to have to put everything on him, and I think Fifita is a stud. Like, I think he is a really, really good player. So that's like dark horse.
Plus 10,000, by the way.
Okay,
plus,
I was like,
a $10 bet wins a grand. That's how much of a dark horse
I know
is.
Nobody yeah. believes in the Big 12, man, but I think Fifita is going to put up huge okay. numbers.
Austin Simmons has the same odds as to win the Heisman as him.
Okay, now see.
That's, I'm telling you what the odds
there's
are.
A yeah. little, there's a little SEC bias in Vegas, okay, Alex? Come on.
Spoken from a true Big 12 man right there.
That's right.
I'll say the same thing as a Big 10 guy, too. There is SEC bias.
How about Drew Mestemaker?
That's a great, you know, and I'm sure that's where
perspective.
He's 50-1 to win. The Heisman.
All these everybody driving in their car was probably like, oh, he's going to the Big 12. He's going to say Drew Mestemaker, right? That would be the no, because I'm not basic. Okay, I'm going to give you Noah Fifita. Now, Drew Mestemaker obviously was awesome at North Texas last year. He, if not for Eric Morris going to Oklahoma State, that guy would have commanded top dollar on the open market. Like, honestly, I wonder about like Miami, because Miami got into a desperate situation to go get Darian Mensah. Like, he would have wound up somewhere like that had he not been.
How good do you think
coach.
Oklahoma State's going to be this year? There's obviously that they got obviously for him to be in the Heisman race, they also have to be
yes,
very, very good.
I think they're going to win like 7 or 8 games. I think a lot of people feel like they're a dark horse contender to get to the Big 12 championship game. That's a little too rich for my blood. They didn't play a whole lot of defense at North Texas, and they brought a bunch of that roster. Like, if you're not up to speed on that, I mean, they're bringing like over 20 players. I think it's like 24 from the North Texas roster. So people are making the Kurt Cignetti comparison because he brought a bunch of guys from James Madison and won double-digit games and went to the playoff year one at Indiana. I'm not there. I think Eric Morris is really good. I think they'll be much better. They also have Caleb Hawkins and Wyatt Young, the two best offensive weapons that Mestemaker had last year. So he'll be good. I bristle a bit at, I've seen a lot of people being like, oh, well, the American to the Big 12, it's not that big of a step up. I think it's a bigger step up than people are letting on there. And I just don't know that they're going to have the defense to propel him to like Heisman levels or Big 12 championship game levels. But they will be way more entertaining than they've been the last few years.
He averaged 312 yards a game last year. They throw it all over the yard.
They did. And man, that Oklahoma State offense was as dull and dreadful as it gets. And they have not won a Big 12 game in 2 seasons. So that's, you've got a lot of ground to cover there. That's a part of why I say, like, you can flip that roster and it's like an 80% roster churn there, and that's all fine and good. But man, that's, I know we're in an era where you can do it quicker and quicker these days, but that is a lot.
Good stuff from John Kurtz. Again, he's going to join us on a regular schedule during the week starting. Drew has it scheduled. Is it next week or the week after Kurtz is going to start joining us every week? I can't remember, but he's going to join us weekly.
My plan is leading into week one.
Okay. So on a weekly basis, once we get to week one, we'll have Kurtz joining us.
When K-State starts and KU starts and, okay. You know, everything really gets
Makes
going.
Makes sense. Perfect. But we wanted to have him in for a Fan Club Friday brought to you by Jay Rieger and Circus Sports. All right. You mentioned Cyrus Allen name. So let's talk a little Chiefs football before we get out of here. Tomorrow, preseason game number 2. Yes, Cyrus Allen will be a guy everybody wants to watch. Although we've had Nate Taylor on, and he made the point now, like, he's seen enough at camp where he almost doesn't want him to play too much in preseason anymore.
Really?
I still want to see him play. I still want to see him play in preseason, even if it's not Patrick Mahomes throwing the football. But I get some of that logic. I told Logan earlier, the player that I'm most interested in tomorrow, other than Mansoor Delane, who we just haven't seen, and he'll finally get some game action, is R. Mason Thomas, who is thinking of college. We're an Oklahoma guy, obviously. Yeah. And we saw him as a speed rusher at OU. We saw him show some of that off last week. But now that Ashton Gelati's banged up and maybe could miss time, we don't know for sure. I think he could end up playing a lot more. So I want to see R. Mason Thomas tomorrow.
Yeah, this is where I'm. You're more in the weeds of what's going on in training camp, right? Peter Woods has been a little banged up, right? Is he playing?
He's going to play, I believe. Yeah, he had an ankle injury, but I think the expectation is going to play. And we were mentioning him. I was not concerned about his first preseason game where he really didn't do much. We all think he's going to be a factor, to say the least, early on in the year. But the question will be, will he get like the actual looks he needs? Meaning, in the first game against the Rams, he was double teamed. That's not going to happen in the regular season when he's on the field with Chris Jones or Tonga.
Well, see, so Peter Woods is like, if you're creating the type of guy that I'm going to gravitate towards in a lab, it's him. Like, wildly talented. Maybe there are some issues going on that are keeping him from reaching the full potential. Maybe you got to really tap into him. I just get really sucked in by I see the potential and the talent, and I'm like, okay, we can make this where I can fix you, right? Maybe this is why I'm still single. I can fix you. Peter Woods is the guy for me. Like, I have been really intrigued by that the entire preseason. I'm like, what are they going to get out of him? Because I think if they hit, like, I love them taking a huge swing like that. I would just so prefer, and I know sometimes you got to shorten the swing and just bop it to the opposite field sometimes, right? But I like, especially in the draft and with the position the Chiefs have been in, with where the franchise generally has been over the last decade, take some swings, man. You're going to need to find the next Chris Jones, the next Travis Kelce. You're going to have the next wave of guys coming up here. So I think Peter Woods is the type of guy that could be that. So I really want to see him. Really want to see him. Nothing against R. Mason Thomas, but Peter Woods. That's my type of dude.
He's definitely on the list as well.
Yeah, a lot's been made of the pass catchers for the Chiefs this offseason. A lot of the fan base disappointed with the lack of resources put on that side of the football. And Rashee Rice has become a seriously polarizing figure here in Kansas City. There's people that defend him with the torches and pitchforks, and the people that have absolutely said, nope, I'm out. I have no belief in Rashee Rice as a player. Where do you sit on that spectrum? Are you somebody that has expectations for Rashee Rice coming into 2026, or somebody that, like, hey, anything's better than nothing when it comes to number four?
Somewhere in between. Like, I don't think I'm quite to anything's better than nothing, but I'm like, if you're getting a good to great season out of him, I would consider that gravy. I'm not going to bank on that. Like, you've lost my trust. And again, I just said, like, I'm the guy that's like, hey, I love the potential. We can fix you. Like, let's... So taking a player like that, the character concerns, I'm usually not going to be that scared off by character concerns. I'm going to say, hey, you've got Andy Reid, you've got a strong locker room, figured out. But clearly, that has not worked the way that it needed to with Rashee Rice, and some of it, you know, injury-wise, like that's not his fault either. But the combination of those things, I can't take that to the bank, man. I'm going to be relatively optimistic, cautiously optimistic, but if it's anything more than just like an average season, I would consider that icing on the cake, gravy. I'm not relying on it.
So I despite me not wanting them to bring him back after this year, no matter the circumstance, I think he's actually going to have a great season. I really do.
Okay, well, sell me on it.
Well, I think there's no doubt he has to prove that he can stay on the field, and he's coming off still a knee procedure in the offseason. But I think when he's been on the field, if you want to play the average game and you average out when he's on the field, like, he's well over a 1,000-yard guy. I think 1,200 yards is possible for him. I think he can be that type of receiver. And it's also a contract year for him. Now, I've said he can go have 1,200 yards, John, and he can go have 8 touchdowns. I still don't want to bring him back. I don't trust the guy.
No,
I don't trust the guy. Now, I think there will be fans and others that in January or February, if he has that type of season, will convince themselves that no, they got to find a way to bring him back. We all know how this game is played. I've said over and over, I'm willing to say I don't care what kind of year he has. I just don't want to give him a contract. Let somebody else deal with that problem. But in this circumstance for 2026, I actually think he's going to have a huge year.
I mean, your lips to God's ears, man. I hope it happens. I'm with you, though. I would not bank on bringing him back long term. It's funny you bring up that hypothetical scenario, because you can already see that playing out, right? Like, the fans will go nuts. I mean, you see the reaction to, like, Cyrus Allen right now. Like, we want to buy in.
The Cyrus Allen reaction, don't you think not only has he looked great at camp, he has, and some of the catches have been phenomenal, but we're all desperate for them to find their next top-tier receiver, right?
Yes.
And Cyrus Allen is the first glimpse we've had in a bit. And I say glimpse because it still is.
Yeah.
It is still camp and 2 catches in a preseason game.
Hey, man, but that catch that he got up there, you see him climb the ladder?
He's clearly going to have more of an impact than anybody ever thought he would. Like, if we would have had this conversation on May 1st, we'd be like, okay, yeah, he's like the 5th receiver. What is he going to have, like 100 yards? Now, like, you can convince me that he has a chance to be north of 400. I'm not in the camp that he's suddenly a 900-yard guy his rookie year. To me, if that happens, then Rice is not healthy. Or Worthy's not healthy.
You're right. That probably ultimately is not a great thing for the football team, right?
I would say so. Now, some others would say, oh, no, he's Puka Nacua, and that's just, you know, that's just what he's going to be. Look, by all means, I would love for that to be the case, at least on the field, Puka Nacua, not off the field.
Yeah.
On the field, Puka Nacua.
Yeah, keep that guy away from a Twitch stream.
Man, oh, man.
Hey, by the way, Cyrus Allen, Big 12 guy.
That's true. Cincy.
Big 12 guy.
That is a Cincy guy. Yeah. Him and Brandon Sorsby last year.
That's right, you know? Man.
Man,
he was catching balls from Sorsby.
Yeah.
We might have some. Have you guys interviewed him? You might have some questions for.
Well, it's interesting you say that. We did try to get Cyrus Allen on the show multiple times in our 14 shows. We were up at training camp, but could not get him on the show. Isn't that unfortunate? Really sucks, doesn't it?
That's Texas Tech trying to cover everything up, man. They didn't want the truth to spill out there about Sorsby.
No, I'm talking about Cyrus Allen.
Made the call.
I know, but I'm saying you would be digging it.
Honestly, I'll be honest. If Cyrus Allen was on the show, I don't know if we would really ask more than one question about Brendan Sorsby.
I know that was some sarcasm. You guys are
so
professionals,
good.
Okay? You would do it the right way.
You know, there's people that maybe they were. I don't know why they were concerned, but yeah, we would love to have had Cyrus Allen on the show. Yeah,
that would have been awesome. I mean,
would love to have had Kenneth Walker on the show too.
That's literally where I was going.
would love to have had Peter Woods on the show as well.
Man.
Yeah.
Just getting shot down left and
right. Or Chris Jones.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
You guys were just getting.
Or even Garrett
Nussmeier
on the show. That would have been fun too.
Look, my hands are up. I have nothing to do with it.
What do you make of Garrett Nussmeier, by the way, real quick? I actually think he's going to be the long-term number two backup for Mahomes for a while after this season.
It's really interesting. My take on him in college was like, so beginning of last year, like we just had this Heisman conversation. Like he was getting a lot of Heisman love. And I don't know. Every time I watched Garrett Nussmeier in college, if you told me he's going to be a career backup in the NFL, I'd be like, okay, yeah, like I can see that.
Yeah. Nate Taylor said he has a chance to be Chase Daniel.
Yeah. That seems to me what he profiled out to be. I never understood like the upper echelon level hype for him at the college level, being like a Heisman level quarterback. I just never saw it. And I know, I'm sure he would tell you a large part of that was injury history. Like he had obviously a nagging injury last year that bothered him a lot, but I never saw him as like this, wow, that's a can't miss type of prospect. So that has no bearing. Let me be clear. No bearing on him being the long-term number two in Kansas City. And that is the type of quarterback that I thought he was. I just thought for LSU, we're like, you know, we've seen Joe Burrow and Jaden Daniels. It's like, I didn't think he was like that level.
No.
But people, it felt like treated him like that at the college level, which I never understood that the gap between that.
I actually do want to see him play again tomorrow. I think he's looked good at camp and limited action he had in the preseason game and stuff. Like,
yeah,
he feels like one, he's already light years ahead of what they had in Oladokun. And that was abysmal last year. But I think there's a real chance that they could finally take advantage because Andy's always had the veteran backup. He likes the veteran backup quarterback. Here they are again with Justin Fields. But hopefully year two Nussmeier is somebody that they can just have on a cheap rookie deal for 3+ years. And that's your backup. And you don't have to waste, you know, $8 million a year on a backup quarterback or whatever they've been paying recent years for Minshew. And then just, I don't know what Justin Fields is making this year, but it's, I don't know. They gave up a draft pick for him, though, so he's obviously going to be the number two quarterback this year. Justin Fields is making, what is he making this year for the Chiefs? $3 million, I guess. It's pretty small cap.
Yeah, not bad, but you're right. It feels like, you know, this entire Mahomes era, like it's just been a higher-priced veteran backup. I'm all for Nussmeier.
Kurtz, good to have you in studio, man. Looking forward to having John Kurtz join us on a weekly basis starting in a few weeks talking all things college football. Thanks to Logan for filling in for Cody. Cody's back on Monday. We'll find out how his meeting with the dean at UMKC went too. Maybe that's why he's not here. Or he's with the Juggalos.
He's with the Juggalos in
the Ozarks. What was it? 260 pounds of drugs.
It was almost 500 pounds in total.
Okay.
It was a ridiculous amount of drugs that were confiscated.
Have a great weekend, just not in that way. And we will talk to you guys on Monday here on 96.5 The Fan.